It's a pleasure to have with us today Dr. Hani Ashamallah, and we'll be discussing the subject of why pain and why suffering.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. This topic actually is a series of four topics, and I'm going to summarize in two slides probably two of the other lectures, and then we'll concentrate on pain. So the whole series is about how to answer an atheist. And an atheist usually have four major issues. And the first issue is usually about evolution and creation. The second issue that atheists usually struggle with, what's after life or what's after death? The third issue is why pain? And that's the topic of today. And the fourth issue is related to what type of evolution that we are accepting. Is macroevolution or microevolution? And my understanding that you guys have probably dealt with some of these topics. The first question that usually atheists ask, if God is Father, kind, why is He allowing evil to happen? And the second question right after this, it seems that God created evil, because who did? And if He didn't create evil, why is He allowing evil to continue to occur in the world? So those are the four challenges that when I face as an atheist, one or more up to these four usually is faced. Evolution versus creation. Which God is God out of all the gods around? Why is your God is a better God than the Buddhist God or the Mohammedan God or any other God? What's afterlife? Why pain or injustice? So I'm just going to summarize two lectures in two slides. So please bear with me. This is going to take 2 minutes. Evolution cannot be considered a fact because there is something called assumptions. And basically, it's only based on assumptions, but not on facts. If you are in the medical field, there's a big difference between you're assuming there are 47 genes, and you know for a fact there is 46 genes. In our view, we accept microevolution, but we decline macroevolution. And if you are not familiar with these terms, microevolution meaning a differentiation between the same species. So a human being used to have a small tail, and eventually he lost the small tail, and he has a very little bone with very minor small vertebrae at the end of the coccyx. When I was a vegetarian 2,000 years ago, my appendix was as big as another animal, which basically eats only vegetable. Now I don't eat mainly vegetables, so the appendix is that small. So that's called microevolution, meaning differentiation within the same species. And that's why you read in Genesis 2 and 3 that He created from the same species. So we are not coming from a monkey, and we are not a bird that became a man. This is the second lecture. Our God is the true God because of three main things. If the Buddhism, the Mohammedans, the Indians, and any other, if they put their gods as cards, each one of us comes out with his own card. So you put Christ, and they put their own God, Buddha or whoever, or Krishna or whoever their God is. Find me the God that He is mightiest, but loving and wise. Three features has to happen coexisting in the same God for me to love this God. You will not find these three coexisting in any God but our God. This is a very difficult topic that there is no way I could cover it, but I just want you to know these terms. Any theologian who wants to prove God's existence usually goes through four channels. A perfect being or a perfect design, meaning the universe had a designer, and that's why he is a perfect God. The moral argument that all the law system, all the legal system in the whole world makes the moral is a perfection. So if I go and rape a girl, that's immoral, even if I'm not godly. If I go and steal, that's immoral, even if I'm not godly. Who created the moral system in the human heart, regardless of you are religious or not? That's proof of God's existence. Three, the first cause argument, meaning everything has to happen through a beginning. There is one beginning to something. There is an A to the B to the C and so forth. Ontological argument, meaning only a perfect being has to exist. For example, if you say a unicorn versus a horse, of course the horse is better. Why? Because the unicorn does not exist. Okay? Now let's get to the where is God when it hurts. So this is a very common argument, at least in the States, and I'm sure it can happen under, but I put it this way, September 11th. Why? Where was God when terrorists forced their way into United Airlines cockpit number 93? And where was God when people are killed and raped and harassed and many orphaned children are left? So the lecture will go through many questions, by the way. I'm going to pose a question. I'll pose a claim from an atheist, then I'll answer the claim. About four questions. If God is loving, powerful, and good, then evil and suffering should not exist. That's the claim. He should have prevented suffering. It's logic. If God is loving, he should prevent suffering. Why didn't he make the world where people did not hurt each other? Like, why God did not create only good people and remove the evil from people? How could he create evil? Or didn't he? Did he create evil? These are all questions under the same topic, although it could be asked in a different circumstance. So let's answer the first question. Where did evil come from? So it's all about the free will. God created humans who have the ability to freely choose. Meaning, if God removed the free will from man, then I'm not created upon his likeness and his type. We were all humans, regardless of your religion, were created upon the likeness of God, and one of these likenesses is the free will. Humans abuse their freedom of choice by rejecting to choose God. One of the proofs that you and I have a freedom to choose, that there are many people refusing God today. You are the minority who are accepting God. But there are many, many, many people who are rejecting God. If God did not give the free will, there shouldn't be anyone rejecting God. And that's how human suffering came in the world. God gave me the free choice. By my free choice, I rejected God. And by my free choice and rejecting God, I chose evil. And by my own evil doing, I created evil actions in the world. Saint Gregory of Nyssa said, "Flesh is not the cause of evil, but it is due to our free choice and free will." Everyone has hormones, everyone has instinct to indulge in sexual lust, for example. But the difference between a pure and a non-chaste person is I chose to be pure and he or she chose not to rape a person or to commit adultery, to do the evil thing. So it's not because God created the hormones in you and me. We are all created alike. But I chose to use my hormones wrong and rape a woman and then do evil. And I cannot blame God because God gave me hormones, but he gave it to you also. But you chose to be pure and I chose not to. So the next claim. then why did God create humans with free choices? Might as well remove my free choice. Give me one direction to go in so I don't hurt anyone and I don't go to hell. Choose to hate, to destroy, to kill. He should have created humans to do just good. In the liturgy, there is a word that's very nice. We say, you have given me mashurat hurriyati. I think the council of freedom, I think. I think that's how we say it in the American liturgy. You have given me the council of freedom. You have given me the ability to be free. That's even in our liturgy. Okay, so you can answer the atheist who is saying this by saying, if love is programmed, is it really love? And the example I like very much, you know, when the girls were young, I hope they don't have the same habit up till now, they used to buy dolls, Barbie, and you press something in her stomach and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. I hope you didn't believe that. Nobody should believe that, right? Because that's programmed love. Love is a choice. Love is a risk. You take it. Because I can love you, but then you hurt me. But I chose to love you. I am ready to accept the hurt should my love is fallen into the wrong person. But I still choose to love. But love is not programmed. So by creating people with the choices, that's the claim. God, in effect, created evil. That's the main harsh claim against God. Let's see how to answer him. Actually, God did not create evil or suffering. Because God is an absolute goodness. You know, there's something called the absolute virtues in God. That's a different topic. Like, he's an absolute love. He's an absolute charity. He's an absolute giving. He does not take. He does not know how to hate. He does not know how to do evil. It's not in his nature. He's an absolute. So God did not create evil. But in order for him to give you the potential for a real love, he actually may have created the potential, not evil. Watch out for the language. He may have allowed the potential for evil to exist. Is that difficult to understand? Let me rephrase it. In order for God to give you the ability to love or to not love, I don't want to say hate, to choose him or not to choose him, by you not choosing him, by your own free choice, you have chosen the potential to do evil. But it's up to you, sir, ma'am, to do the evil or not. Let me rephrase it one more time. If your doll has the choice to say, I don't love you, okay, and then you by yourself did not put the battery in, this love is not coming. There is no way, I love you, I love you, I love you. So in other words, if God did not give you the freedom to reject him, you would have had no freedom to choose evil. Is that okay so far? Yes? Okay. So by him giving you the freedom to love him or reject him, he gave you the potential to choose evil. But the to do evil is your choice. Is that clear? Am I getting close or no? Please tell me, I can repeat it again. God did not create evil. But when he gave us the free choice, he allowed us to choose to do evil. So in effect, he gave us the potential only, but the action is ours. The action to choose to do evil is my doing. So it was the human's free choice who brought the potential into reality. So if God is God, he could have anticipated the consequences of giving people free choice. Taban. if God is God, he should have... I'm building up. I started, did he create evil? Then yes, he did have giving the free choice. Now moving to a different direction. If God create, and if God is really God, and he is all-knowing, he's an omnipotent God, he's the all-knowing God, then he should have known that man, by their free choice, they would do harm. Did he realize that? Of course he did. But to God, the risk was worth it. What do I mean by that? Let me give you the example I was giving now. By me taking the choice of me loving my friend Tamer, that's a choice I make. If Tamer, God forbid, in the future hurt me, it was worth it. Because without me choosing to like Tamer as my friend, if I say, no, I don't want to like him because he probably will hurt me, I will be alone. If I would say marriage is usually fail, or women usually hurt men, or men usually hurt women, then I am eliminating a choice that would have resulted in a very good marriage. If I would say all cars cause accidents, I'm not going to drive a car. That's also a wrong claim, because many people drive well and do not cause accidents. Accidents still can happen. But if I, because of a percentage of possibility of an accident happen, of a friend hurting me, or a wife or a husband hurting me, I remove this, then that's a risk I take. But this risk I take could actually make me happier. So, would you risk the friendship, marriage, knowing that there will be disappointments? Everybody doing it. We're still all doing it. You guys are ready to love each other. Maybe one day you marry. You are willing to take a friendship, although you don't know the person will hurt you or not. Why are you doing all of this? So now why are you blaming that God, although he anticipated that man would do harm with the free choice he gave him, why are you blaming God that he gave us the free choice? We are doing the same thing. Is that clear? It was so much worth it to God, not only to create us with free choices, but also, and this is a very good salvation point, prepare the way for us to come back to him when we rebel. See, God is a real father. He will tell us, go, my darling, go and behave as good as you can. Should you fall down and make a problem, come back to me. I'll fix you up. It's not like a doll that's broken cannot say, I love you. No, I'll fix you up. You have the choice to reject me, but should you reject me and you want to come back to me, I am a father willing to accept and willing to fix you up, and you will be as new. And that's the idea of renewal of baptism. Why baptism in the Orthodoxy faith is a dynamic process. Like, we are baptized when we were children. But by repentance every day, I'm renewing this. How I'm renewing? I am making my free choice to come back. Because although I was baptized, I didn't make that choice, but I was baptized. Every day I'm falling, but every day I come back. But we are not ready yet to let God off the hook. How? Why God does not wipe out suffering? If he did not cause suffering, at least he should take it out, take it away. Remember, I'm building up like a lawyer thinking, what would an atheist ask you and what are his claims or her claims? Even if he did not cause suffering, he would have still take it away. This is actually an example from an atheist. He would say, If I would sit down and watch my child getting wrecked by a truck, wouldn't you consider me a bad father? You would? I'm seeing my son being hit by a car and I'm watching. That's the claim that people are making against God, that God is letting suffering to go on. Okay, he's not the cause of it. We saw that. But even if he's not the cause of it, why doesn't he take it out? If he can perform miracles, why doesn't he? There's so many people asking for miracles today. Isn't he a bad God? That's what an atheist will say. And that's why, actually, the most common religion today is the religion of no religion, is the lack of religion. It's not the Muslims or the Catholic or this and this are the most common. The most common spreading religion in the whole world is the absence of God. There was a very good old book by Al-Mutran George Khidr. Try to find it. I think it was called, it's written in Arabic, I'm not sure if it's in English too, but it was talking about the religion of today, today's religion. And he made a whole big argument that the most, and that's 40 years ago, 30 years ago, it's still available. And this is very true today. In America today, we are not facing as much other religions as you think, but we are facing Americans and Copts leaving God, whether they are Orthodox or non-Orthodox, to become godless. And the reason is, God looks like a bad God. Not like the other, the Hindus, or they don't like the others either. But this God is a bad God. Why shouldn't I be without God? So let's try to answer this. It looks like he is a bad God. But really, what about all the earthquakes, the famine, all the natural disasters? Is it really also due to God? Actually, scientifically, it's not related to God. Scientifically proven, cutting down rainforests, and this is across the whole world, it's an international crime, resulted in higher CO2 level, leading to thinning of the ozone layer, resulting in global warming and increased flooding. So the Sandy and the Irene and all of this could have been God-made, but could have been man-made also. Why God didn't wipe out suffering? And I'm going to give you, I think, four stories, four examples. Very easy to tell an atheist. And remember this, Daddy, look what I did. Daddy or Baba, look what I did. The first example, when you were a young girl and your mom is trying to teach you how to thread, did she do it for you or she let you do it? And how many thousands of mistakes you had until you were able to thread the first thread in the needle? So, if your mom allow you to go through the suffering of learning how to thread a needle, why are you looking at God as if he shouldn't do that to us? We did not answer the benefits of suffering. It's coming now. But we are trying to answer tangentially why God is allowing suffering to still occur, although he is a very loving God. And we are trying to get it from examples within our cultures. The second example, why don't parents do the homework for their children? Why don't they? You do it. Mama, please solve this for me. Oh, you are a bad mom. You hate me. You want me to stay until 2 a.m. to do the homework? And because she's a good mom, she's letting him down. By letting him stay longer hours, now he knows how to multiply 4 by 4 and 6 by 12. And if they have done it for you, maybe you guys would have not known how to multiply 6 by 12 or whatever. So this suffering caused a benefit. You guys all are grown up, excellent in your graduations or colleges, but you went through some suffering. And who did it? The most loving. your parents. So why are you talking about God as if he's such a harsh, bad God that he allowed suffering? Apparently, suffering was fruitful. When you first, some of you, not all of you know how to bike, but when I first learned biking, I remember how many times he would let me go, and then I do this, and I fall. And I cry. I said, why did you leave me? Why did you take your hand off the back of the bike? He said, because I want you to bike. But you made me fall. No, I didn't. I didn't make you fall. You fell. But while you are falling, he grabbed me, he put me back, and he puts his, and all of a sudden he leaves. And then I look back and I don't find him and I fall. Until one time I was able to go through, and all of a sudden, are you holding in the back? I can't look. No, I'm not holding. And his voice looks 10 steps backward. I actually went 10 steps backwards. And then I fell, but I was very happy. Why I was very happy? Because I did it alone, but after a lot of sufferings. When a child or one of us had an abscess, you know what's an abscess? خراج يعني بالعرب. This is the only Arabic word just because it's a medical word. When you have an infection in your hand or your back, imagine this story, imagine it. That your father take you to the surgeon, to the doctor, and the doctor says, I have to open the abscess here. But you, Dad, has to hold them very strong. If you let him move, my scalpel may reach to a nerve, and maybe he will not move his hand very well. So imagine what's happening. I am the father, and I'm hugging my child this way, and I'm holding very tight, and the kid keeps kicking and, why are you doing this to me? Leave me alone. You don't like me. You don't love me. Leave me. And the guy is working. And then all of a sudden, the kid stopped kicking and crying. And then after, I'm making up the story, so don't feel... So after what happened, the father asked the child, why did you stop crying in the middle of the procedure? It wasn't hurting? He said, oh, it was very painful. So what happened? Did you get used to the pain? Oh, no way. So what happened? Oh, there was a mirror this way, and there was a mirror here, and I saw you crying while you were holding me. So I couldn't hurt you more by my kicking when I saw your pain in your face. There is a verse, this is the first verse I bring up, but there were maybe some more. I think it's Isaiah 63. And it says very nice. It says, in your afflictions, he was afflicted. فِي دِيقَهُمْ تَضَايَقْ. Exactly, that's what I mean. He will let you go through afflictions, but be sure he is afflicted. Exactly like the mom threading a needle, the dad teaching the biking, the dad holding the kid going through an abscess opening, or even how many times he will put your hand under your back or your tummy, and then you fall down, you sink, and you swallow so much water, and you keep crying, and you hit him, and you tell him, you are a bad dad, you let me go down. And now look at all of you, how much you are enjoying swimming now. If he has still been holding you to avoid you the suffering, there is no gain, no pain, no gain. So why God does not wipe out suffering? We're still in this question. So look at these two statements, very good statements. I'm going to read them and we'll try to understand. God is wise enough to foresee meaning see the future, to foresee that we need some pain for reasons which we may not understand today. Like he sees the pain of today will bring a fruit in 2 years. But I don't see the fruit 2 years. I only see the pain today. So I'm crying today, but he knows tomorrow. Which we may not understand, but with by which he foresees as being necessary to some eventual good. There is some pain that God sees necessary for an eventual good, and he has to inflict it today for you to take it and sort of collect it tomorrow. The next sentence is from St. Paul to Romans, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And this is a famous verse, 8:28. Everybody should know it, and Pope Shenouda was living it every day. We believe, now I'm moving from, I told the atheist all the answers that I told you. This is all intellectual answers. Now, from now on, I'm going to give you about 2-3 slides, biblical answers, why God is allowing the pain. So one of them is very good reason, that although we don't see the fruit of the pain, we believe. And faith is without seeing. Faith is a risk taking. Faith is a risk taking. You take a risk when you believe, because you believe what you don't see. Like if I believe that Marina is here, that's not faith, because she is here. I see her. Okay? But I believe that this pain today will make me a better loving person, because I'm not quite loving today. Then all things work good for those who love God. Okay? So, every one of the men who go through gym, they know no pain, no gain. All the ladies who go through dieting and they want to lose weight, they go through, very nice ice cream and she can't take it. There is some pain, but there is gain. Okay? And in Romans 5, he says, not only that we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation, look at this, it's almost like a doctor telling a patient about the benefits of the procedure. I like it very much. It's almost a very intellectual way of thinking. My friend, you go through tribulation, it will give you perseverance. And the perseverance will give you character. And the character will produce hope. Now, would you take the procedure or not? Some people would say still no. But to others, there are fruits. And these are the fruits. In Hebrews 12, and by the way, Hebrews 12 is all about tribulations. Please read it. Pain corrects life course. For they, by the way, he's talking about your moms and dads. Very nice. Very interesting topic. Look at what he's saying. Very philosophic. For they, and he means our human fathers, indeed for few days chastened yani at Dibuna. It chastened us as seemed best to them. They chastened us according to their own knowledge. And by the way, a lot of our parents, they don't know anything about raising up children, and they may have chastened us wrong. Right? Didn't you see a child before said, his parents made a mistake raising him up? Okay, fine. But how did they they still chastened them? According to their own beliefs or knowledge or upbringing. But he is Christ. For our profit, for our benefit, that we may be partakers of his holiness, now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present. Today, the chastening is not joyful today. No one enjoys pain today. No one enjoys loss of a friend or a parent today. No one can enjoy loss of a job today. No one can be enough. The pain today, we will be lying to say, oh, the pain is always joyful. That's not human. Humanistically, no chastening seemed to be joyful for the present. Absolutely. Cutting the abscess, falling from the bike, drowning in the water, all of this were not present at that time. but for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. There is a fruit that we gain. And every single person who has gone through a suffering, he will never, if you cannot trade him back for this year. If you speak to anyone who gone through suffering and now he is a better person, if you tell him, how about if God takes away this year from you? Like if you go to Joseph today in heaven, Joseph the righteous, Joseph from the Old Testament, and you tell him, Joseph, listen, we will keep you with the striped shirt in the bosom of your loving father. We will make your brothers like you, no well, no prisoner, no loss of a father, nothing. But you will never be a symbol of Christ. You will never be the savior of a whole nation. You will never be told about you, God was with Joseph, so he was a successful man. He will say, no, I would take the 14 years in prison any day. If you ask Peter today, what do you think about losing a boat, the nets are ripped because of the lot of fish, and you are screaming in fear, it's very scary, and you are an experienced fisherman, Luke 5, but you will never walk in the water. He said, I will walk in the water if you take anything from me. To me, that's a fruit. Who will never forget that Peter walked on the tribulation? He was having a nice walk with Christ on top of the trouble. Okay? Now, coming back to an atheist, so I gave you a view from the intellectual point, I gave you a biblical way, I want to add some fruits, even the Americans, if you talk to anyone, you'll tell him, what about, say, even September 11? Where were the positives out of the negatives? For example, Joseph, from a prisoner to a prime minister. In September 11, we learned the courage of people who were fighting to save others. That's written in books now. It's amazing stories. If you read about it, when he will call his wife before, I'm not talking about the two jets that hit the World Trade Center. I'm talking about the other two that the people made it to fall in Pennsylvania and before Virginia, Washington, in order not to hit the White House. They called their wives, if you read the stories, and they were the ones who saved all the others. They know that they are dying, but in spite of this, we knew their courage. We will never have known it. We thought all the Americans are selfish or greedy or self-centered or egocentric. There were so many prayers, even from non-believers. There was endurance of the rescuers. So even if God can use suffering to accomplish good things, one last claim from an atheist, it's not fair. Terrorists, rapists, bullies who make life miserable, why God let them go away with this? Let's answer this, and this is the last part. When I was young, I used to, when I love Ayani, one of the actors in a movie, a hero in a movie, and I find him, yani, بالضرب جامد يعني, yani, he's really having it hard. I usually leave the movie in the middle. I don't want to see him dying. I don't like bad endings. That's why Arabic movies to me were very nice. Oh, everybody get married, everybody lives, everybody, no problems. But the bad thing about me, that I used to shut off the movie in the middle of the movie, because I'm upset that my hero is in trouble, is being unjustly treated, unfairly treated. I feel bad for him. So I said, no, I don't want to watch this movie. And then somebody else from my family will tell me, oh, by the way, after you left, you slept, We saw the end of the movie, and you know what? He won. My point is, every time you go through a trouble, this is the middle of the movie. God did not write the end yet. God did not write the end yet. I made a sketch for one of the Christian English channel. We call it Dogma in Action. I gave the whole video to Abuna Dawood. Uncle Wadid will give it to you. But one of the things that we did, we were talking about free will. I imagined a guy watched a baseball movie. You know the baseball or football? And he knew the end, who won. His son came in and he recorded the movie to his son. His son walked in and said, "Dad, did you record the movie for me?" He said, "Yes, Habibi." Do you want to know who won? No. "Dad, please, don't burn it for me. Don't let me watch it. If you want to sit next to me, but don't open your mouth. Watch out what I'm saying, because every single word has a meaning. Don't open your mouth. You sit next to me, Dad. Let me watch the baseball game." He likes Team B, and Team A is crushing Team B. And he is so sad and so upset. "Dad, what happened? Who will win?" "You told me not to speak." "But please, are you going to cheer for A or B?" "I'm not talking about it. Dad is not saying a word." So the guy keeps cheering for B, but B keeps losing. Cheering for B and keeps losing. And Dad is not speaking a word. Later on at the second quarter, or second half or whatever, B is winning. And then he goes, "Why you didn't tell me? You let me go through the whole 2 hours upset, stressed, worried, sweating. I couldn't go even to the bathroom because of... Why you didn't tell me?" He said, "You told me not to speak. Wouldn't I told you this? What would you like it? You would have not had the fun, the excitement." But another point, did the encouragement of one versus the other make a difference? No. You could encourage as much as you want. But at the end, we need the end. So please, when you see somebody suffering and he is going to lose the faith in God, tell him this is not the end. The end is written upstairs. Who said the end today? Today, we lost a great servant in San Martin. I mean, he was serving with Ashwaiyat, and I got to know him a little bit. His name is Hani. And I need to tell you something about him, because I think it's beneficial for us. He's a young man. He's only 40. So, he had a very bad cancer. Very bad cancer. But I'm told after the surgery he had for the tumor above the kidney, which is, by the way, no treatment for it except surgery, they found that it was already spread to the liver. They did surgery, and this servant continued to serve the kids of the Upper Egypt, and he would take the pain medicine, go and serve. And his life wasn't good before, by the way. I was told by his closest family members, he was really not a good guy before, until he really had a real change. And some of the changes happened during his sickness. But I want to say one thing. His family thought that he doesn't know that he has cancer that's terminal. So I walked in, and they tell me, "Please do not tell him anything." So I asked the family to leave. And this is new, by the way. Abuna Dawood doesn't know even that I spoke to him. So I stayed with him and Nabil, Abuna Dawood's secretary. And I start talking to him, "Hani, how do you feel?" He said, "I don't know, I'm tired, I'm in pain." This is the night before he became in coma, that's it. This is the last time he spoke. This is Thursday night. So I tell him, "How do you feel?" He said, "In pain." I tell him, "Do you know what's wrong with you?" He said, "Yes, I'm dying." His wife and everybody else thinks that he doesn't know, and don't tell him. Don't tell him. How can you don't tell him? God gave him this to make him a better person. If I shield it from him, then I am doing wrong thing to what God's plan is. God wants to make him prepared. So he told me, "Of course I'm dying." I said, "Are you scared?" He said, "No, I'm not scared." "Are you worried about your 3 children? he was silent. So I told him, don't be scared. God is going to be a better father than you. He said, yes, of course. And he's going to be a better husband than you. He said, yes, of course. And he was very happy at the end. I was told that he was very happy. I'm trying to make one point. He is sure that this is not the end. He is sure that this is not the end of the movie. He knows that the movie started today, actually. The same moment, 2 a.m. this morning. He went to heaven, 2 a.m. this morning. God was not waiting for us to make a funeral prayer. He started glorifying him the same 2 a.m. in the morning. So that's the beginning of the movie, not the end. Next, please. The fact that God has not evened out the score in every case does not mean he will not. Very important. The injustice in the world does not mean God is unjust. All what it means, he may be slow in judging. When to judge, how to judge, up to him. Is he going to judge? 100%. Is it going to happen here or there? I don't know. That's up to him. I will end with this, and this has happened, of course, all of us know this part from Revelation 5, Revelation 6. Of course, in the time of the Qadisin Church and Naga Hammadi, Maspiro, this has became like the sympathizing part or passage of the Bible. Let's read it. When he opened the fifth seal, Revelation, so that's in heaven, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood or on those who dwell on earth? When are you going to take our revenge? That's a very good question. Let's see what God answered. Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed. He told them, wait until we, the rest, their brothers, complete their journey, and then we all become joyful together. I'll stop here. I know I took a little more than I should, and I'm sorry if I did. I wasn't prepared to stop earlier. I'm very sorry. But if you have any burning questions, because I know you finish at 8:30, right? Okay. So this is the time for discussion. I'm not going to answer alone, so help me out. So if you have questions, go ahead. And if you have comments, go ahead.
The idea of the risk, you said that God took a risk. We may get out evil, and that's why he gave us the being free. It was worth the risk. You recall this part?
Yeah, I did. But you have to understand, I'm using a language that you can talk to an atheist with. Remember, an atheist, to him, God is no God. The latter part of my talk can be given to anyone in pain, because that's the biblical part. But if you choose to start with the verses to an atheist, he will leave you from the first 5 minutes. The reason of God giving the free choice, I think that's the main topic. The reason why God gave the free choice to men, so when they love him and they choose to live with him, that's up to them, not up to him. Many years ago, I'm not sure why, Dr. George remember very well, we used to have Maimar al-Abd al-Mamluk in Holy Friday. It was an amazing, amazing thing in St. Mark Church. Unfortunately, a lot of churches dropped it today. But it's very nice. Maimar al-Abd al-Mamluk means, why God allowed evil? And that the whole summary of this means, If a student needs a test to be honored, and if, for example, a fisherman needs a challenge to be glorified, God allowed evil to occur so he can give you a crown. Would that answer your question? Okay. Maymar al-Abdul Mamluk, try to find it in the old Holy Friday books.
Okay, again, adding up to his question, what you said at the end of the session, that the answer to why there is pain is very good for a believer or someone knows God. But again, to an atheist, he wouldn't would this answer be satisfying for him? And no, now you don't understand, but later pain will make you better, and you know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. And that's why this is the last slide. You don't give the last slide to an atheist in the first 5 minutes. In the first 15 minutes, you want to talk to him, did God create evil? Why did God allow evil not to be wiped out? Why is he allowing people to do evil without taking a judgment against them immediately? All the intellectual part. You come to the end and tell him, but by the way, sometimes the unfairness is only the midst of the problem. You haven't seen the end yet. And you can give many examples.
Yeah, just I want to share a couple of comments here. First, pain is part of life. We have to go through pain anyway. And the more pain we have, well, whatever doesn't break your back makes us stronger. And God, well, he might allow pain to happen to us. It might be for several stuff, to purify us. For example, if you have, as they say somewhere in the Bible, if you want to purify silver, you have to maybe overheat it 7 times until the silver maker can see his face on it, reflecting on it. So the more troubles we face in our lives, it will make us better people. It also might be like a warning sign for someone who is swayed away from God's route. Well, the man is free to respond whether to appreciate God and be attracted to God, or go on nagging in an evil life. God would use pain to make us better people in the end. And after you go through the painful experience, you will appreciate God's work in your life. So you will have more faith, stronger faith, and I'm speaking for a personal experience. You will have stronger faith and more patience after that. So whatever you face in your life, you know that it's not the end, as you just mentioned a few minutes ago. So it will make you a stronger person, more patient, more tolerant even, and you will appreciate people's pain as well. So if you're doing a service for someone, you will feel what they go through. So this will make you even a better servant in the end. So it's for the best. So everything worked together for the best in the end.
Thank you. Very good comment. And you remind me of the verse in Acts, I think 9. After St. Paul was hit to the extent that they thought he was dead, Acts 13 maybe. He went and make a sermon, and his main sermon was بِدِيقَاتٌ كَثِيرَةٌ يَنْبَغِي أَنْ نَدْخُلْ مَلَكُوتِ السَّمَوَاتِ. With multiple, many afflictions, we must enter the kingdom of God. Go ahead.
Concerning evolution, you said that there were no facts about it, but they do claim that there were like the old skeletons found with the oblong shapes and stuff like this. That's one thing. The other thing, for when we say that God took the risk, I think that when we talk to atheists, they do have like another like a violent way or like a hostile way while talking, and they don't accept anything. Like if a believer accept the idea of taking the risk, they would say, why God take a risk if he's a God?
Why would God accept the risk?
Take a risk if he's a God.
I follow you. Because I answer this. Because the risk means you are allowed to love him by your own free will or reject him by your own free will. He doesn't want slaves. He wants sons and daughters. If you are a slave, he takes away your free will, you must love him. But what kind of love is this? That's a Barbie doll love. Okay? Coming to your first question, it's not our topic to cover it. However, I submit to you, if you read more, this is more assumptions. And assumptions means observations without factual evidence. Meaning, if they look at the genetic findings in each of these corpuses or these findings in the frescoes or anything, usually they don't match very well. And there is a lot of work being written about that. So then,
okay, about the part of the earthquake, that's okay. what I understood in this part, that earthquakes are due to the increasing of the CO2 or the human's activities, okay? That's why I understood. First of all, we heard about earthquakes from the beginning of the world. And other point, we are talking about the activities of the humans, like the increasing of the CO2 and all the other factors, it has no mean that the earthquakes will attack and will hurt thousands of people or other countries. It's not logic, or by other meaning, it's not fair.
Okay, so explaining the natural disasters, it's always very difficult. It's always very difficult. Some explanations can be depicted from the nature and the CO2 and the ozone layer and other things. Some others, they claim the increasing number of wars and the increasing numbers of fumes, secondary wars, have done a lot of changes in the course of the earth and have done increasing of the earthquakes. To tell you the truth, it's very hard to find one answer that fits all. Like, I cannot convince you that there is one answer to fit all. The only thing I want you to know about this, that as much as there are natural disasters, there is a lot of natural blessings that are not being accounted for. You see? Like, if you take the incidence of earthquakes versus the incidence of number of fruits being offered by the trees in the whole world. If I tell you the instance of hurricane versus the incidence of rain that allowing forests to grow and give fruits to many people who can. See, the problem is we look at the natural disaster and we make it a commonality. And I want to talk about this one second. Recently, and I'm not sure if just recently, the commonality became looking for also a miracle. If God is God, He should do a miracle. Everyone has a sickness, everyone has a cancer, everyone has this. He's expecting a miracle. And when miracle doesn't occur, then God does not exist. But God promised no miracles. God promised tribulations, by the way, but He never promised miracles. I read something very interesting. It says, God does not give you freedom from tribulations, but He gives you a free guided tour through the tribulation. He does not give you a tour outside the trouble, but He gives you a guided tour through the trouble.
I'll go back to the part where you said that God allowed evil to exist, so that automatic love would be there. And I was asked a question by someone, I cannot call it atheist, he believes in something, but he really doesn't believe in anything. I think he will eventually become an atheist. And then he said, God meant to confuse us, to get us confused. And I asked him how. He said that He created things, good things, for example, like food. And then he said, I shouldn't have lust for food. So why originally did He create food? So or money or whatever. He meant to get us confused, and we will be confused till the end. I didn't know how to answer him.
Have you ever read the difference between the brain cortex of the animal versus the brain cortex of the human? I submit you go to Google and read more about it. The difference between the animal, the cortex, by the way, اللي هي القشرة المخية. The cortex of, which is the covering of the brain in either animals or humans. I was told that the cortex of the brain of a human is so convoluted, to the extent if you spread it can reach almost 6 meters. While in an animal is much less shallower, those sulci and gyri, those grooves, are much less prominent. The reason is, and that's, I think, the answer to your friend, God allowed man or woman, human, God allowed man to have the capability within his brain to control his own actions through the cortex of the brain, while animal instinct does not have the same capability. I mean, if there is a diabetic dog, I don't know what that means. Diabetic dog, يعني كلب عنده سكر يعني. If you put a piece of sugar, he does not know how to stop. But if there is a diabetic man, and he has a will, he knows how that will affect him. No, I can't eat this chocolate today. And I'm not talking about God here. Remove God from the picture. If you have a human person who was raised well, again, remove God from the picture. And very easy, you will tell him, would you rape this girl because your hormones are surging and you like her and you lust for her? He said, no way, hasha lillah. Regardless of the religion. So, but if you have a dog and a doggess, I don't know what's a female dog, let's say a doggess. I mean, he will rape the dog anytime. He doesn't have a control ability to not have sex with this doggess. Regardless if that's his mate or not his mate. But for a human being, not Christian, he will say, no, that's not the right time. She is not quite suitable for me. I am not ready yet. What? I thought it's all about hormones. No. It's all about human control on behavior. So, now add God to this. When we fast, we bring God to the added ability for me to control my behavior. So he is not confusing us. On the contrary, he is letting man to exercise his abilities as resembling God. You resemble. You were created in his shape, in his image, in his likeness. If you imitate, with all respect, animals, then you lost the typology, the likeness of God. And I'm talking even human being. Why there is more goodness in the world than more evil? If you take all the billions and billions in the world, generally speaking, there is more good than, there is less killing than people taking care of children, for example. Why? Because men were created in God's image with ability to give and to love. If you add the Christian view, you become a completely different person. Did I answer your question?
Can you speak for a couple of minutes about the argument of the moral law?
Okay. One of the four arguments to prove God's existence, that's a separate lecture, so I did not give this lecture, so it's not like you missed it or anything. I'm going to talk about, say, the Roman law, the British law. Men made laws without God, right? Morally, moral laws. If you steal, you go to prison. If you rape, you go to prison. If you kill, you get executed. That's human law. Morally, humans have morals. Then God, the one, if he really exists, has to be so morally equipped. If us, humans, creatures, made the laws from our own nature, and we govern each other based on our abilities. Like I tell you, do not kill, do not steal, do not rape, do not this. Then God must be so moral. Now if you read the Bible and you find he is so moral, then it fits. That's the whole point. It's the least of the four, by the way.
I have a question here which is not related to apologetics, although it's related to the subject of suffering. And that is, can suffering be God's punishment to our sins?
I would rather you consider all sufferings are blessings from God. Very, very, very rare suffering is a punishment. If I were you, I would forget it. Is he sinned or his father? Fakrin, the blind man, the born blind, Maulud Ama, Al Haza Akhta Am Abawa, neither he or his father, but for the glory of God. Very rarely God will use suffering, I think as he mentioned, to really redirect a person in a certain way. But I really, like, let me give you this example. I used to drink, for example, I used to drink a lot of alcohol until I developed fibrosis, cirrhosis, failure of my liver, and I went into liver failure. الفشل الكبدي. Is this a punishment from God? Or it's my doing, my free will. But even though I developed it through my own doing, I could benefit from it and consider it a blessing. And while I am going through the liver failure, I start to know God more. I was driving fast. I hit a person. I killed him. I went to jail. It's not a punishment from God. It's my own punishment from earth, from my own doing, because I was reckless in driving. But while I'm in jail, I would start remembering that I should redirect my life and use the trouble. Although I brought it upon myself, I bring the trouble that I brought it upon myself for the edification and the benefit of my soul. Okay? Thank you very much.